Rear Window by Cornell Woolrich. I didn't know their names. I'd never heard their voices. I didn't even know them by sight, strictly speaking, for their faces were too small to fill in with identifiable features at that distance. Yet, I could have construed a timetable of their comings and goings, their daily habits and activities. They were the rear window dwellers around me. Sure, I suppose it was a little bit like prying. Could even have been mistaken for the fevered concentration of a peeping Tom. That wasn't my fault. That wasn't the idea. The idea was, my movements were strictly limited just around this time. I could get from the window to the bed, and from the bed to the window, and that was all. The bay window was about the best feature my rear bedroom had in the warm weather. It was unscreened, so I had to sit with the light out, or I would have had every insect in the vicinity in on me. I couldn't sleep, because I was used to getting plenty of exercise. I'd never acquired the habit of reading books to ward off boredom, so I hadn't that to turn to. Well, what should I do? Sit there with my eyes tightly shuttered? Just to pick a few at random, straight over, in the window square, there was a young jitter couple, kids in their teens, only just married. It would have killed them to stay home one night. They were always in such a hurry to go, wherever it was they went. They never remember to turn out the lights. Don't think it missed once in all the time I was watching. But they never forgot altogether, either. I was to learn to call this delayed action, as you will see. He'd always come skittering madly back in about 5 minutes, probably from all the way down the street, and rush around, killing the switches, then fall over something in the dark on his way out. They gave me an inward chuckle, those two. The next house down, the windows already narrowed a little. With perspective, there was a certain light in that one that always went out each night, too. Something about it. It used to make me a little sad. There was a woman living there with her child, a young widow, I suppose. I'd see her put the child to bed and then bend over and kiss her in a wistful sort of way. She'd shade the light off her and sit there, painting her eyes and mouth. Then she'd go out. She'd never come back till the night was nearly spent. Once, I was still up, and I looked, and she was sitting there motionless, with her head buried in her arms. Something about it, it used to make me a little sad. The third one down no longer offered any insight. The windows were just slits, like in a medieval battlement, due to foreshortening. That brings us around to the one on the end, and that one, frontal vision came back full depth again. Since it stood at right angles to the rest, my own included, sealing up the inner hollow all these houses backed on, I could see into it, from the rounded projection of my bay window, as freely as into a dollhouse with its rear wall sliced away, and scaled down to about the same size. It was a flat building. Unlike all the rest, it had been constructed originally as such, not just cut up into furnished rooms. It topped them by two stories and had rear fire escapes to show for this distinction. But it was old, evidently hadn't shown a profit. It was in the process of being modernized. Instead of clearing the entire building while the work was going on, they were doing it a flat at a time in order to lose as little rental income as possible. Of the six rearward flats it offered to view, the topmost one had already been completed, but not yet rented. They were working on the fifth floor one now, disturbing the peace of everyone all up and down the inside of the block with their hammering and sawing. I felt sorry for the couple in the flat below. I used to wonder how they stood it with that bedlam going on above their heads. To make it worse, the wife was in chronic poor health too. I could tell that even at a distance by the listless way she moved about over there and remained in her bathrobe without dressing. Sometimes, I'd see her sitting by the window, holding her head. I used to wonder, why he didn't have a doctor in to look her over, but maybe they couldn't afford it. He seemed to be out of work. Often their bedroom light was on late at night, behind the drawn shade, as though she were unwell, and he was sitting up with her. And one night in particular, he must have had to sit up with her all night. It remained on until nearly daybreak. Not that I sat watching all that time, but the light was still burning at 3 in the morning when I finally transferred from chair to bed to see if I could get a little sleep myself. And when I failed to, and hopscotched back again around dawn, it was still peering wanly out behind the tan shade. Moments later, with the first brightening of day, it suddenly dimmed around the edges of the shade, and then shortly afterward, not that one, but a shade in one of the other rooms, for all of them alike had been down, went up, and I saw him standing there looking out. He was holding a cigarette in his hand. I couldn't see it, but I could tell it was that, by the quick, nervous little jerks with which he kept putting his hand to his mouth, and the haze I saw rising around his head. Worried about her, I guess. I didn't blame him for that. Any husband would have been. She must have only just dropped off to sleep after night-long suffering. And then in another hour or so, at the most, that sawing of wood and clattering of buckets was going to start in over them again. Well, it wasn't any of my business, I said to myself. But he really ought to get her out of there. If I had an ill wife on my hands. He was leaning slightly out, maybe an inch past the window frame, carefully scanning the back faces of all the houses abutting on the hollow square that lay before him. You can tell, even at a distance, when a person is looking fixedly, there's something about the way the head is held, and yet his scrutiny wasn't held fixedly to any one point. It was a slow, sweeping one, moving along the houses on the opposite side from me first. When it got to the end of them, I knew it would cross over to my side and come back along there. Before it did, I withdrew several yards inside my room to let it go safely by. I didn't want him to think I was sitting there, prying into his affairs. There was still enough blue nightshade in my room to keep my slight withdrawal from catching his eye. When I returned to my original position, a moment or two later, he was gone. He had raised 2 more of the shades. The bedroom one was still down. I wondered vaguely why he had given that peculiar, comprehensive, semicircular stare at all the rear windows around him. There wasn't anyone at any of them at such an hour. It wasn't important, of course. It was just a little oddity. It failed to blend in with his being worried or disturbed about his wife. When you're worried or disturbed, there's an internal preoccupation. You stare vacantly at nothing at all. When you stare around you in a great sweeping arc at windows, that betrays external preoccupation, outward interest. One doesn't quite jibe with the other. To call such a discrepancy trifling is to add to its importance. Only someone like me, stewing in a vacuum of total idleness, would have noticed it at all. The flat remained lifeless after that, as far as could be judged by its windows. He must have either gone out or gone to bed himself. 3 of the shades remained at normal height. The one masking the bedroom remained down. Sam, my day houseman, came in not long after with my eggs and morning paper, and I had that to kill time with for a while. I stopped thinking about other people's windows and staring at them. The sun slanted down on one side of the hollow oblong all morning long. Then it shifted over to the other side for the afternoon. Then it started to slip off both alike, and it was evening again. Another day gone. The light started to come on around the quadrangle. Here and there, a wall played back, like a sounding board, a snatch of radio program that was coming in too loud. If you listen carefully, you could hear an occasional clink of dishes mixed in, faint, far off. The chain of little habits that were their lives unreeled themselves. They were all bound in them tighter than the tightest straitjacket any jailer ever devised, though they all thought themselves free.